It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Lori, Alex, Andy, and Renee, they're all here. We're going to talk about the election snafu last night in Iowa. Apple's record quarter, 5G, and why it's still not going to be around in 2020. And here comes Hamilton on Disney Plus. It's all coming up next on Mac Break Weekly. Mac Break Weekly comes to you from the Twit LastPass studios. Securing every access point in your company doesn't have to be a challenge. LastPass unifies access and authentication to make securing your employees simple and secure. Check out LastPass.com/Twit to learn more.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 699, recorded Tuesday, February 4th, 2020. Crying in HDR. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by Capterra. Find the right tools to make an informed software decision for your business. Visit Capterra's free website at capterra.com/MacBreak. And by CashFly. Give your users the seamless online experience they want. Power your site or app with CashFly's CDN and be 30% faster than the competition. Learn more at twit.cashfly.com. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show where we cover the latest Apple news. Joining us at the table today, Alex Lindsay, Pixel Core.
Hello, hello.
Hello, hello.
Renee Ritchie from iMore.com in Montreal.
Hello, I have news, Renee. Leo. News. So much news.
Really?
Kidding. No.
Okay. Andy Inako from WGBH in Boston. And Lori Gill, also at iMore. How are your fingers after all the typing you did last week?
They're doing just fine.
You survived, huh?
Yes.
Yeah. Congratulations. We were talking before the show about the continuing snafu in Iowa, the Iowa caucus results. I don't know if they've even come in yet. No. But they were held up because, and it turns out, I think now even Iowa's Democratic Party is blaming the app. This is an article just came out on Motherboard from Vice. Here's the Shadow Inc. app. Yeah, by the way, if you're going to get an app to do your elections, is Shadow the company you want to go to? I don't know.
Shadow, hard nope on that.
Here's the Shadow app that failed in Iowa. And they have done the best reporting so far on this app. They actually got a picture of the app. They were able to install. Well, they were able to install. They tried it on two phones. One, they were able to install it on one not. They talked to a precinct captain who was supposed to use it, named Jonathan Green. He's the chair of the Democratic caucuses in Iowa's Fremont Township and Lone Tree precincts. He's also an IT sysadmin. So this is a pretty good, reliable guy to talk to. He said they weren't sent the app until, or information about the app until January 18th. They actually, they were invited to test it January 18th via Test Ferry. That's for Android. There's also a test flight on iOS, of course. But this, and by the way, he wasn't able to get it to install on an iPhone. He was able to get it installed on Android. However, he wasn't able to log in. Green, who used his this is from Motherboard, who used his personal S7 Samsung, said in order to report results, he had to sign in with an email and a password, provide a two-factor authentication, I'm guessing a text message, because he then also had to enter a one-time password from the Google Authenticator app. After that, he'd need to enter his precinct PIN, but he didn't get that far. And this is last night during the caucus. He was trying to report the results. When he entered the one-time password generated by Authenticator, he got this error message. IDP Caucus 2020. Oops, something went wrong. There could be a misconfiguration in the system or a service outage. We track these errors automatically, but if the problem persists, feel free to contact us. Please try again. And then the address specifies an unknown protocol that the browser did not recognize. So it sounds like the install perhaps didn't complete. Three experts consulted by Motherboard said they couldn't determine much about the issue based on the error message. And so because the Democratic Party in Iowa expected everybody to use this app, that app which they only gave training to people and information to people about the day before the caucus, they didn't have a call center set up. They did say, if we can't get the app working, we'll take you can call in as we have in years past. But apparently that didn't work very well. And now they are blaming the app for the fact that they have to do a manual. At least they have a paper trail.
Right.
So they're blaming the app, but now they have to do the recount via paper to validate the results. The New York Times said the app wasn't tested widely before it was deployed. Gregory Miller, co-founder of the Open Source Election Technology Institute, quoted by Motherboard as saying the app, it was obvious the app was rushed. He said, I don't want to say I told you so, but...
I informed you thusly.
I mean, there were security experts for a month saying they're really worried that this isn't going to work. Because there wasn't any outside testing.
This is what Miller
testing.
Said, and this is what Miller does, right, is election security. So when you're vetting an app for something like this, you need to do load testing, regression testing, pen testing. It's not just the app, it's the deployment process. No one should ever deploy an app like this and have a pop-up that says it isn't safe for your phone, which is, by the way, the pop-up that Android users got. It's a stock pop-up you'll get when you install something from a third party, but still.
Right.
Shadow apologized. Apparently he has a Twitter. Shadow Inc. HQ. We will apply the lessons learned in the future. I've already corrected the underlying technology issue. You know why that's important? Nevada also is supposedly using this app in their caucus.
Hopefully they'll do some more training.
We take these issues very seriously and are committed to improving and evolving to support the Democratic Party's goal of modernizing its election process. You know what also is concerning? West Virginia is talking about using an app.
They already have.
For the elections.
Well, they used it in the last elections.
Well, it worked.
Yeah.
There's no paper trail. That's the problem with the internet voting.
Are there any dangling chads? They simulate the dangling chads.
Okay, well.
Go ahead, Andy. Hold on a second,
Laura. Go ahead.
It has to be mentioned that there's a first part of a 5-part report the Senate Intelligence Subcommittee on what happened in the 2016 elections really went into depth on what we need to do to fix elections. I mean, we should say to improve this. Not I was about to say fix elections. No. To improve the safety and security of elections. They did mention that one of the most important features of the election is simple faith in the process, that you have a system that is not going to be hijacked by anybody else. And that's one of the reasons. Well, that's one of the reasons against having a voting by phone. You need to make sure that if something bad happens, there is always a backup, or if there's always an ability for an independent outside agency, whether it's a public service thing or they're being funded by someone, to look at the data to make sure they know that nothing bad happened. There was an incident recently. I forget what district it was in, but they found out that a whole bunch of their touchscreen voting machines, they had like some dead pixels on like the left-hand side of the screen. So that, and of course, anybody who tried to vote for a candidate who was inside the dead zone of pixels, it would not go through and would be voted for somebody else. And that was really, really bad. But it would have been worse if the machine had no paper trail, so that when it was caught almost immediately by the election wardens, who immediately said, "Okay, I don't think that this candidate won by 32,000 votes to 117. We are going to immediately throw out all the digital things, and we're going to go to a paper recount." So that's one of the things that is it's just as important to have the appearance of a fair and safe election as it is to have an actual fair and safe election. Because otherwise, nobody will trust the results. It will always be a year's worth of recounts and court filings. Lori? So that's why you really need a test.
Lori, go ahead.
And exactly what you're talking about, Andy, is part of, I think, it was more than just that the app didn't work for some people. Because, you know, we don't have the numbers on how many people couldn't download the app or couldn't log into the app. But I think what it speaks to is our fear about doing something like this for something that is so important. So you kind of start with the election meddling issues that we had from the 2016 election. That's already put us on guard. We're already afraid, right? And then you take a brand new bit of technology that people haven't even had the opportunity to test yet. So when it gets to that point where you download the app and it didn't work the first time, you give up, you make the phone call. Or maybe you got it downloaded, but you couldn't figure out the password. You give up, you make the phone call. There's many steps under which the fear of it going wrong, I think, created a fervor of not even trying to make sure that it would work. We're already a little bit afraid of like how our technology is working for us anyway. And I think this was just a culmination of a lot of reasons to doubt its ability to work right, causing people to just immediately switch over to, I'm going to do it the way that I feel safer and more comfortable with. I think maybe, you know, 4 years from now, this might work better. But right now, this was just, there was just a number of things that that rolled into this ball of a complete failure.
That's what Alex was saying. It's kind of ironic because they were so worried about election meddling and hacking that they didn't let anybody see the app.
Right.
And then what bit them was the obvious, simple stuff. The app didn't work.
And the hard part is that, I mean, almost all of this is correctable with process, which wasn't here. You know, like that.
You're
that
the king of this. When you set up events like this, or
this is
what you know how to do.
I mean, this is what we worry about all the time. Is you have to practice. You have to push all the bugs out. You have to, and you always. I have never seen a platform of any size with any company launch and not have some quirks. You know,
it's normal.
It's normal. So you don't launch it on the, you know, you don't launch it a day before you actually need to use it in a mission critical. You know, this is a year of development. It's $3 to $5 million of cost. You know, it's reported that they paid Shadow like $60,000.
That's
it.
All.
Now maybe Shadow was deferring that cost across a lot of other states or trying to. You know, they raised like $7.7 million in funding, but I doubt they spent it all on this app. And so, you know, and I think that the place that we see with a lot of these apps, and I'm going to be a curmudgeon for the moment, is when the coders are in their 20s, early 20s, and the people speccing it are in their 60s, you end up with this thing where people don't understand what they're asking for and people don't understand what could go wrong. You know, and so you end up in this kind of craziness of, what we see here is people not being afraid enough of what's going on. They're so afraid of having the code, you know, not work. Or be hacked, that they didn't think that it was just not going to work, which is what really happens all the time, is it just doesn't work. And it doesn't work for Apple. It doesn't work for Google. It doesn't work for Facebook. It doesn't work for Microsoft. All of them have those bugs. You know, all of them have problems going on. You know, and it's a normal problem. But the thing is that that's the thing you got to be afraid of. It's more likely to have that happen than the Russians, you know, getting in to mess with your Iowa elections. You know, they looked at the wrong beast and ended up getting bit, you know, from a different direction.
Here's the from the Shadow webpage, shadowinc.io. Apparently, they say their mission is to build political power for the progressive movement by developing affordable and easy to use tools for teams and budgets of any size. They said in their statement from the CEO, Gerard Nymura, you know, Shadow is an independent for-profit technology company that contracted with the Democratic Party to build a caucus reporting mobile app, which was optional for local officials to use. I don't think you blame Shadow. You can sort of blame Shadow. They're the tech people in this. You certainly could blame management at the Iowa Democratic Party for not knowing what to do, but they're not the tech people in this.
But I think that a lot of times what happens is you have non-technical people making requests, they want it to be done for 10 cents because they think that this is all really expensive.
Right.
You know, and the thing is that what they're learning right now is that it can be really, really expensive because this is disastrous for the candidates who are trying to get momentum. You know, and the problem is that the Bernie followers got sandbagged on the last election, and now they feel sandbagged again because they
somebody
had a really
got
good
sandbagged.
Turnout.
You pay a lot of money. You go to Iowa. You spend a lot of time in Iowa. You hope to be the one that gets to give that speech in prime time.
Before New Hampshire.
So Hampshire to say we won, and that's what Obama did 8 years ago.
Well, and it's what, and it's
12
what
years ago
Santorum wasn't able to do when he actually won Iowa, and then it was announced that Mitt Romney won. And that was the end of his campaign.
Yeah.
You know, like, and so this is like, you know, and again, I mean.
It's a big responsibility that Iowa has.
This is the last time.
They're never getting that chance again.
They're never going to be first.
That's two. That's two now.
Yeah.
Two and you're out. Not only first. And also, I'll be interested to see what happens in Nevada because apparently they're going to use this app as well. On the About page for Shadow, it says, we are campaign and technology veterans who have built and implemented technology at Hillary for America, Obama for America, Google, Kiva, Apple, the AFL-CIO, and the DNC.
I don't know.
But it doesn't have any names. Rene Ritchie, are the Canadians laughing at us at this point?
Oh, God, I don't know. I mean, there's so few of us here to vote.
It's a small state up north. Yeah.
And we have elections at a non-set schedule whenever we go to the Queen and she allows us to have elections and we can take down a government with a vote of no confidence. So it's a whole different Mishugana here,
yeah,
Leo.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this it was a caucus. It wasn't a poll, an election. It isn't a big election. It's a primary. If you're going to make mistakes like this, I guess that's
it. Looks like Nevada dropped it.
Oh, they've abandoned it now.
Yeah.
All right. So there you go.
But it's also a huge opening for someone with a really big microphone tonight to make fun of, which is a...
We know who's going. That's going to be, and I think that's already...
Which is going to be a less than great result for everybody.
Somewhat. And yeah. You know what? That's not unfair.
Yeah.
His initial tweet, the president's initial tweet was, Democrats can't even run a caucus. How are they supposed to run the country? You know what? That's not unfair.
Well, it does point out one of the risks of having a built-in lack of faith in elections. If you... it creates the unprecedented opportunity for someone who did not like the result of an election to say, I think that as the responsible thing to do would be to remain in office until the people have faith that this election was completely above board.
That's right.
And that's right. That's a scary thought.
That's not what you want.
Nevada's I sure do hope nobody heard you.
No, don't. No notes.
There's already an orange binder on some shelf somewhere. I don't know whether it's how to retain power or here's how we administer the tranquilizer, and here's the giant armoire we're going to hide the body in. While we can take it out of the White House. Closet.
The LA Times is saying the developers were formerly Clinton tech team for 2016. The Democratic caucus in Nevada is in just 18 days. It's February 22nd. They've already said they will not be using this app. We will not be employing the same app or vendor used in the Iowa caucus they had planned to. We've already developed a series of backups and redundant reporting systems and are currently evaluating the best path forward.
So. I don't like the idea of sort of staying stagnant in this kind of thing, like in our election process. But at the same time, it is so important that if we can't get it right the first time, we should just stick with what we have, because that one seems to be more reliable and our election process is very important. And it's not just kind of a matter of, well, we didn't quite get it right like this year, so we'll try again next year. You can't really do that. So I definitely, I would like to see progress in the way the system is done, but I also would not want this to happen again. So I think it was very smart for Nevada to say, you know what, we're going to go back to the things that we already had in place, all these redundancy plans to make sure that we get this right. We're going to just drop this whole technological thing and just kind of stick with what we know.
I think that one of the things that's really important is finding ways to constantly hit something in the public without it being mission critical. I mean, we run into this all the time. Someone wants to, let's say, stream to a brand new platform and it's going to be launched. You have no idea what's going to happen until you turn it on. And so what we're always trying to look for is how do we do a bunch of things that aren't really visible or aren't that important? And if they fail, then we figure out what we can fix. But before we get to that one that actually matters, we want to keep on hitting those because you just know you're going to run into those. And just coming out of the gate with it is and even the sample rate of all 50 states to me would be a very small sample rate to test something, even if they got all of them. I mean, they need for something of this magnitude, they need to be doing hundreds or thousands of tests. They need to think of a platform that they can use day in, day out with the public that is the same platform that they're going to use for something bigger. Building something custom
celebrity
for this
quizzes.
Is dangerous.
Just like Facebook-style celebrity. Which Game of Thrones character are you? Run it a million times. Nope. Which Friends character are you?
Yeah.
I'm going to quote one of my great heroes, Helmut von Moltke the Elder, who said...
Not the younger.
No, he was an idiot. No, no battle plan survives contact with the enemy. Isn't that what you're saying?
Yeah. Or the map is not the territory.
Yeah.
My favorite one related to that is Omar Bradley that said, amateurs talk about strategy and professionals talk about logistics.
Yeah. Logistics, baby.
Because it's just
the
sort
of that's what happened here was the logistics failed. No logistics. It wasn't a hack. There was this logistics fail. Yeah. Here's a quote from CNN. The Iowa Democratic Party pushed heavily to make this year's caucus a high-tech affair. They initially proposed a virtual caucus system that would see caucus goers. You didn't even have to leave the house. Use a smartphone. National Party officials, national officials shot that down over security concerns. We talked about this on iOS today, Micah and I. Even though we all love technology and we're technologists, you ask technologists, especially security experts, they aren't always going to say the best solution is a technological solution, right?
Right.
Sometimes a piece of paper isn't so... Yeah, they're scared of it.
Yeah, we're the first ones terrified.
We know too much. Yeah.
Yeah. The other problem is you can't assume that every single district has the money to upgrade to the sort of standards that people in a think tank would think is necessary to run an election. It's the great thing about paper ballots is that it's easy to deploy. The hardware is already there. It is considered to be very, very reliable. And suddenly asking a district that can barely afford its educational budget to please pay $780 each to replace every single year of your voting stations with something that's up to date, that's a really big ask.
But it's money that can come from the Democratic National Committee, you know, and if it's something that is the most important election in the last 100 and some years, it would have been to their best interest to make sure that it worked.
Yeah, but the other problem is going to be every time there is a way to unilaterally make an election system better, there will always be the calculus done by one party or another to say, oh, this might cause more voters who vote against us to get an opportunity to vote, and therefore on principle we're going to block this from happening. It's just a really, really big mess, and it's going to take a revolution to really fix all the problems.
This, of course, from the always on point Randall Monroe. This is not a current one, but it's still very apropos. Asking aircraft designers about airplane safety. Nothing's ever foolproof, but modern airliners are incredibly resilient. Flying is the safest way to travel. Asking building engineers about elevator safety. Elevators are protected by multiple tried and tested fail-safe mechanisms. They're nearly incapable of falling. Asking software engineers about computerized voting. That's terrifying. Wait, really? Don't trust voting software and don't listen to anyone who tells you it's safe. Why? I don't quite know how to put this, but our entire field is bad at what we do. And if you rely on us, everyone will die. They say they've fixed it with something called blockchain. Ah! Whatever they sold you, don't touch it. Bury it in the desert. Wear gloves. Thank you,
Salt
Randall Monroe.
Salt the earth.
All right, that's enough of that. We're going to talk about Apple's amazing... record-setting quarter.
Wait. They weren't doomed?
Turns out, no. Who knew?
Oh, man. I was so ready.
Who knew? I told my dad, Apple stock. It's only getting worse.
The good news is they get to whistle past that graveyard for another quarter. Poor bastards.
But the ground is coming up so quickly.
And I like Macworld's article, Don't Try to Trick Tim Cook. We'll find out what that's all about in just a second. Our show today brought to you by Capterra. Capterra. We were just talking about how bad software can be. There's nothing worse than old software, especially old software that requires you to run old, insecure systems. But it's the fact. That's why so many businesses are still using Windows XP or Internet Explorer 8, because the kid Joey, who was the son of the nephew of the boss who wrote it in 2003, has long ago given up software and gotten into real estate, and he can't update it. And it's the only software we can use in the business. That's a bad thing. That's why you need Capterra. There is modern, up-to-date software for your business. I mean it right now, and Capterra is the place to find it. Over 700 categories, big categories like CRM software, video management software, that kind of thing, and little line of business things like yoga studio management or dog groomer management, project management software, network security software. It's all in there, and Capterra makes it so easy to find exactly what you want. You can select the category, select the business, identify the features you need, check the boxes. The filters are all designed to match the software you're looking at. So you can say, I only want 4-star ratings. It runs on premises. It serves 200 customers. I can make appointments. And, oh, yes, I can ask what dog breed. I mean, it's that detailed. You check those boxes. It'll give you if you want, a comparison chart of all the software that fits the bill. And by the way, there's so much software in here. You're going to see, no matter what you're looking for, dozens of programs that'll do it. Then the best part begins. Captera.com/MacBreak. Run through this, then look at the reviews. There are over more than a million current reviews from real users. So you, this is so cool. And I'll tell you why there's so many reviews, so many good reviews, some positive, not positive, but valuable reviews, is because it's free. Yeah, Captera is free. You don't pay for it. It costs you nothing. And so I think a lot of users come back to Captera so grateful that they put a review up. They say, hey, this worked. This didn't work. This is going to be invaluable to you when you're choosing that software. Validation of every review you can trust, and you'll be more confident that you're getting the product that'll work for you. So don't pay Captera anything. If you want to pay it forward, leave a review. Captera is the leading free online resource for software solutions. There's more than just a search, too. They've got helpful articles, free guidebooks, step-by-step ebooks, a whole lot more. You got to check it out. Captera.com/MacBreak. It's free, as in free, free, free as in free lunch. Find the software tools you need for your business at Captera, C-A-P-T-E-R-R-A, Captera.com/MacBreak. Captera, we thank you so much for a great product, for supporting MacBreak Weekly. And we thank you, MacBreak Weekly listeners, for supporting us by using that address, Captera.com/MacBreak, Captera. Software selection simplified. So what is it that they say? Give me the top line, Lori Gill. Did Apple have a good quarter?
Yeah, it did.
Yeah, there you go.
A little bit.
Yeah,
a little bit. Revenue 91.8 billion, far ahead of the expectations. The market thought they'd get $4.54 a share. They got $4.99 a share. They got product revenue of $79.1 billion, services up to $12.7 billion. That's been a nice steady increase every quarter. Overall income, this is 3 months, kids, $22.2 billion. They're going to almost $8 billion a month. Lot to learn from this. In fact, I'm going to turn to Jason Snell and his great color charts. I love those charts. He does them every quarter. First chart's very telling. Quarterly revenue by category. That big blue wedge, 61% wedge, iPhone.
That's changed a lot because remember it went down to almost 50-50 when the iPhone took a big hit and everything else was up. And now there were no new iPads. And except for the Mac Pro and the MacBook Pro, there were no new Macs. So the iPhone... back on top, baby.
Wow. But this was to be expected. It's this quarter is the holiday quarter where they announce new phones. They sell a lot of them.
Yeah.
Not a surprise. Services 14%. Wearables 11%. Revenue, you know, it's very spiky, as you can see. We're in that peak quarter. But still, the highest revenue. Is it in Apple's history? I think it is.
Yeah.
Profit also highest.
Pretty much product company history.
Yeah. Of any company.
Yeah. Yeah.
Revenue up 9%.
Any publicly traded company.
iPhone revenue up 56%.
I mean, to give you an idea, Google finally had to reveal. So the rule with revealing income is if the CEO sees the line item, you're supposed to tell shareholders. And Larry Page never cared about how much any of the Alphabet companies made. So since he technically never saw it, he didn't have to disclose it. But Sundar Pichai is the detail person. So for the first time, we learned revenue of the constituent parts of Alphabet. And YouTube is $15 billion in AdSense.
Oh, wasn't that interesting?
Year.
Yeah.
And that sounds like a lot, but then you look at how much each of these Apple units is making per quarter.
Yeah. Yeah. No, YouTube is not. When I saw that number, the first time I've ever seen a number out of YouTube, it was lower than I thought it would be.
Yeah.
It's still a lot of money.
I mean, I'll take it. I'll take it.
Even that it's
just
a narrative.
It's like all these big
services
successes.
In a lot of ways. Yeah. You know, the big cost for YouTube, obviously, is, I mean, there's lots of costs for YouTube. I mean, the server costs and people costs and everything else, but it's a
moral cost.
Well, this is before.
Digital ad.
This
one
gross,
thing you're
though.
Noticing is the margins, as Apple moves to services, the margins aren't very, the gross isn't very big yet, but the margins are like double what the hardware
is. Well, look at 60 compared to 30, yeah.
Look at the growth on wearables, home, and accessories, but I think this is Apple Watch, right?
Apple Watch
AirPods.
AirPods.
Let's not forget AirPods. In fact, maybe it's mostly AirPods. Apple does not break it down.
And Apple Watch Series 3 and AirPods Pro were still Apple was not able to supply them to fit demand yet.
Yeah.
So this is with constrained demand on two popular products.
Year-over-year revenue changed 37% over last year.
Not too shabby.
Although, last year it was 54% growth, 48% the year before. So
was that year before or quarter before?
Year-over-year.
Year-over-year.
But you're right. It's quarter.
Yeah.
So that's confusing.
Because that was a release
last
of the AirPod
quarter
Pro.
Was 54% year-over-year growth. Last right. quarter. That right. was very confusing. Thank you for clarifying that. As you said, Mac and iPad, not impressive. Look how linear that growth is for services. Although, didn't Luca Maestri say Apple TV Plus revenue is immaterial?
Yeah.
What does that mean, immaterial, Laurie? What does that mean?
Well, they launched it in the middle of the quarter, It's free for almost everybody. So I think right now they're just not incorporating it in, or it's just there's not enough data to be reflective of the actual numbers. And I think it was Luca that was talking about how they're planning on sort of like spreading out revenue for it over the next year. It's going to be sort of like divided out amongst devices, the device purchases, because all of those people have actually, they get that first year for free. So they're sort of taking a little bit from the right. actual device sale itself and moving it into the service. But there's a lot of unknowns to account for. So I don't think we're really going to see numbers that matter or that are really solid more than a year from its launch because of that initial freebie section of time.
Fewer people took the freebie than they expected?
Berenstein did, I think 10%.
I don't think Apple said it.
Oh.
Tony Sakanagi.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So that was an analyst said that.
But that's, so you have to take into consideration some of that stuff. So what he might have been saying with that is 10% of device purchases, not necessarily 10% of people who were qualified for
right.
it.
Right, because you have to bought three or four devices this year, yes. and I only took one
exactly.
subscription.
Exactly. So that's something else that you have to consider is the family sharing thing, that only one of the subscriptions right. can be used with the family sharing. So that knocks down that sort of like device purchase spread out amongst the services thing. And there's also a lot of other countries where either it's not available at all or it's available, but none of these shows are first language, something other than
might well be 100% of U.S. buyers per person
that are qualified for it. Right.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
services, nevertheless, very nice roll up 17%. That Apple TV is in the services, right? It's TV Plus is a service.
TV Plus. Yeah.
TV Plus. Yeah.
Service,
the thing. Did they say how much they want to spend? Because they spent, $1 billion last year? Netflix spent $17 billion. Is Apple going to up the ante?
They didn't say in the meeting, in the earnings call, what they're going
asked.
To spend.
Yeah, nobody asked. They were too busy asking 5G questions that they knew Tim wouldn't answer over and over again. Like three times. We have some color on 5G.
Super Bowl.
Next week, 1 week from today. In fact, I should mention MacBreak Weekly will be a little bit late next week, because we're going to do the Samsung event. They're announcing their new Samsung Galaxy S, we think, 20. I noted that all of the phones they're announcing are 5G.
And $1,000 and up.
And very expensive. I don't want a 5G phone. I can't get a 5G signal here.
T-Mobile's barely 5G, Leo. You'll get sub-6. You'll be fine. It'll feel like LTE. You'll be good.
I'm already in for 6G. I'm just going to
I'm down for
you
6G,
laugh,
man.
They're meeting about it now.
I know.
It's relentless.
Of course they are.
Oh, it is a point, because if you most people who are, even people who are spending $1,000 on a phone, they're not buying it to replace it again next year. So if you want to try to get $1,000 out of somebody, you better be able to tell them that, no, this will not be useless in 2 or 3 years, even though it'll probably be 4 or 5 years, if that.
But the modem's going to be so bad. Relevant. Like, it's going to be like, it's not the modem you want.
We're talking
for 5G.
Yeah, we're talking about salesmanship. We're not talking about actual technology. And also remember that, isn't it great that in 2020 it is now kind of expected that you will see the tick and the talk releases come in the same year? Well, we'll get the S20 and we'll get like the iPhone 12, but then we'll get the iPhone 12 Junior Edition in 3 or 4 months after we bleed off the steam from everyone who's waiting to upgrade for the major one. So we'll see non 5G versions.
To Leo's point, like, they're also it's going to be so confusing because you're going to have the phones that do 5G as in sub six, and you have to figure out what your carrier supports. And then the MM Wave one and like the three or four markets that have that.
That's a different
and
phone
you're
entirely.
Walk behind a tree. Yeah. And you're going to walk behind a tree and it won't work. And you're and people are going to be so confused. You're going to buy it unlocked. You're not going to know where it's going to work. It's going to be wonderful for us.
I boil this down. It's going to be an LTE phone. Just enjoy it.
Yes.
Yep. Right.
But the thing is, I have to pay more for it. I may even have to get a 5G subscription, which is more expensive. I may get terrible battery life, and I'm not getting anything better than I got.
But according to Verizon Super Bowl ad, it will help you throttle emergency services.
So you picked up on that. I really was annoyed because Verizon got a lot of heat a couple of years ago because they throttled firefighters during the wildfires.
They're still trying to dig out of that.
And so all of the Verizon ads ever since have featured emergency personnel using Verizon phones without any mention of the real truth of the matter, which is you don't want to because they're going to throttle you.
And they have no idea how to use 5G. None of the carriers had any idea how to use 5G in those ads. 5G.
The other issue is will 5G be where most of the fires
of course
are?
Not.
And the chances are
actually
highly
unlikely. I take it back. So I was in the T-Mobile store, and I thought, well, maybe I'll get myself a 5G phone. This was maybe a month ago. They're selling, you know, the two of them. They have the OnePlus McLaren edition, and they have a Samsung. And I said, well, this is exciting. T-Mobile, I saw the map. 5G lighting up everywhere. Can I get it here? No. I'll probably get it in San Francisco.
And again, like
Where can I get it? He said, you can get it in Ukiah, which now Alex and I know that's actually that's where the firefighting is going on. You can get it in a tiny town in Northern California.
Go ahead, Andy. Talks's point, though, emergency services, they will bring a truck out to create a point so they can connect to 5G or 4G or wherever they want, because, you know, the fire doesn't respect towers. I actually had a chance to use real 5G for a few days in Providence using a loaned phone, and it really is a suboptimal thing. Not only, just as you were saying, it's almost as though there are like footprints painted on the sidewalk saying, stand right here. And keep the phone away from your body, and then you will get like really good speeds. But even when that does work, the battery suck is horrible. You can actually feel the phone heating up in your hand. Wasn't during winter, so that wasn't really a feature ad. It really is going to be, like Renee said, like the first 5G phones, I think for the first couple of years, are going to stink, and they're not going to be anywhere near worth the trade-off for getting it. Whereas getting a finely tuned LTE phone with chips that are designed to that are really well optimized for power and heat dissipation, I wouldn't worry about buying a 5G phone until 2 years from now, maybe even 3 years from now.
Which is good, because Apple will not have a 5G phone this year, right?
They should.
I think at some point Apple's...
They will.
Yeah, so they're working really hard with Qualcomm, like a flat-out sprint to try to get sub-6 5G into a few markets for the September launch, and then I still believe that MMWave is going to be WiMAX. It's not going to end up being a consumer technology.
Yes, I agree,
it's just
too.
Nowhere near useful for consumers, but to get an MMA, because that's all that Verizon and AT&T
want to
talk about.
When you say sub-6, you're talking about 600 megahertz, the frequency?
Yeah. So, and my colleague Daniel Bader had the most beautiful way of explaining it, because people think it's not real 5G. But what it does is basically LTE is a myth for a large percentage of people in this world. They never get anywhere near LTE speeds. They just hear about people in cities talking about it. But sub-6 has it doesn't have the speed of millimeter wave, but it has much more range and much more reliability.
Yeah, because a lower frequency can go through walls. But the millimeter wave is such a high frequency, it bounces off spit.
It bounces,
literally.
But what it means is that people in rural and suburban areas who've never been able to get the full value out of LTE, they'll get the full value of LTE out of 5G.
Sub-6. It's confusing. Don't forget our survey. We'd love to get your thoughts about how we're doing and what you'd like to see next. twit.to/survey20. Thanks in advance. One graph at the very bottom of the page I thought was interesting. I'll let you guys tell me if it is. Apple regional year-over-year growth. Europe and China had been negative for a long time, since, you know, more than a year ago. Now both positive. In fact, Europe is growing faster than the U.S. now. Is that, do you think that's, did they comment on that? Is that good news? I think it's a good news.
They didn't comment on it, but I do think it has to do with the lower cost entry level phones. The fact that they still carry the XR and the iPhone 8, and now that they have the iPhone 11 as the standard phone instead of a $1,000 phone. These are all things that point toward kind of allowing more people into the ecosystem. So I think the Apple Watch Series 3, the price drop on that. I think these are all indicators of why it's growing out in these markets that have traditionally been doing negative.
Well, and here's the graph that kind of confirms what you said, which is regional revenue. America's through the roof. And Europe and China, while it is going up a little bit, isn't going up nearly at that rate. So, yeah, they're selling more phones. They're selling less expensive phones. That makes perfect sense.
Although growth in China right now under the current conditions, is like even a small amount of growth is impressive, especially since, again, exactly 1 year ago, Tim Cook wrote that famous letter saying that China has tanked and we're going to have to take a hit for the second time in the company history.
Yeah. So what changed? You think is it Lori's thesis that it's the less expensive phones?
I think it's a variety of factors. I think, you know, for as much as people keep saying Tim Cook is no Steve Jobs, we've learned that the inverse is true as well. And he has been balancing trade sanctions and the personalities involved and the currency fluctuations and just the general feelings in China with pricing and a whole bunch of other things to stimulate that market again. I think it's worked better than I expected, and I think than most people expected.
For people also, who criticized Cook for his kind of political stance with the president and in China. Well, that's what you get, though, when you play the game.
Shareholder value.
Right. You get shareholder value. Yeah. Go ahead, Andy. I'm sorry.
All I was going to say is that we're learning, Apple's learning that in many parts of the world, price sensitivity really is king, Apple is seen as a luxury brand, and you can respect a Ferrari, you can respect a Lamborghini, but you never for a moment consider actually being able to buy a Lamborghini. Especially in a country like China, where Android has for a lot of different factors has become kind of like the de facto operating system, and the iPhone is the luxury brand. You really have to, you're forced to compete with really, really good phones that the equivalent of the United States would cost only $400 or $500. And like Lori said, it is amazing. It's one of the best moves I think Apple has made tactically in a long time to keep the older models in the lineup and figure out a way to sell them at a competitive rate, because still a 2 or 3 year old iPhone is still as good as a lot of mid-range Android phones that are out there.
And even India did way better than I think anybody was expecting. They were calling it a boom thanks to XR sales and 11 sales.
They're also getting a lot of help from the government there. They had a lot of bridges to mend with the Indian government, but now that they're trying to bring more manufacturing into India, trying to bring more jobs from Apple into India, they're getting a lot of help on both ends.
I wouldn't be surprised to see Apple go both directions too, where we see something where we see a cheaper phone, and then we also see them continue to have a top end phone that keeps going up.
Because everybody on this panel will spend any amount of money.
There's a lot of
to get the latest technology.
But there's, you know, I was at at the Vlog University over the weekend. It was great. Yeah. You know, Justine
looks fantastic.
Ezrick is amazing.
She's so good. She uses the latest iPhone 10.
A lot of them do.
Or
like what I was
Pro Max.
What I noticed down there was that I almost didn't see. I mean, among those that group, there was almost nobody that had an Android phone. I mean, it was almost everybody had iPhones. Yeah. And so it was. Just
if you're doing video, it was for video bloggers. If you're doing video, there's really no choice. You're gonna get an iPhone.
Yeah. And so it was. There's just the app. The app selection is better. There's a lot of other things.
And so Filmic Pro or whatever.
And Steve Martin and Mark Spencer, who's on the Mac Break Studio, they took that new Filmic app, the Dual Take, and they put you'll like this. They put two of them at 90 degree angles with four directions.
Oh boy!
So they could do a round table discussion.
Oh, it's what we should do.
Round table discussion. They brought it all in to multicam in Final Cut and just edited it as a multicam and switched it through. I thought Leo needs to see that.
Oh.
Yeah. It was, and it worked. Like, it totally worked.
Wow.
And they had it all synced up, and it was the first time I'd ever seen it. There's some, anyway. It's.
I never thought this $1 million studio would get obsolete quite so fast.
Damn it, Apple.
But I think that there's some some of us that would just keep buying whatever the best thing that Apple has to do it. And if it went up to $2,000, maybe
I'm
we don't get one every year.
A fair share of that market.
But I think that if you make sure that you continue to serve the more cost sensitive,
you do both.
Go down to $400 or $500 or $300. I would love to get my kids, for instance, the less expensive ones.
Well, and I think they're timing now. They're going to do Sprint, right? This looks like the next SE will be this spring. You kind of split it in half, so you can. If you, what you'd love to do is have those spikes kind of just stay there all year long, right?
The people who cannot wait to have the next hottest top of the line iPhone will always have the chance to get it in October. They have to give people a few months to say, no, I can't possibly wait a few months. I know that the mid range phone is going to be good for my needs and I'll save $300, but yeah.
That's exactly right.
It's a tactic worthy of a Romulan.
You know, we left out the number one top line number. 150 billion pockets, y'all.
Yeah.
150 billion. Was it 150?
150 billion. And that doesn't include AirPods. Yeah.
Not including AirPods. Billion? Active Apple devices, Macs, iPads, and phones. But 90% have to be phones, right?
150 or is it 1.5 billion?
It's not quite close to it's close to 100 billion, but iPhone by itself has not crossed 100 billion yet.
100 million or 100 billion?
150 billion.
Billion.
B.
Billion. Wow.
There's what, 8 billion people?
No, sorry.
Getting this all
right? No, it's 1.5 billion.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Mm-hmm. Almost 1 billion iPhones. Billion.
Oh, yeah, it couldn't be 150 billion.
I was like, that's a
thank you again, Alex, for correcting me.
See, this is what happens when I actually read the article. I get up early, gazillion. I read all the articles.
No, in your head, you're thinking there's 8 billion people in the world. They couldn't possibly. Yes, of course, it's 1.5 billion.
Plus 98% customer satisfaction on iPhones. Yikes. That's pretty good.
Good numbers.
Let's just say room for improvement. Let's not let them get us.
That's incredible. We get impressed by having apps have a 1.5 billion, but man, the difference between having an app have 1.5 billion installs and have 1.5 billion people using your hardware
every
is just
single
such a
month. That's an amazing number and a huge success. And I don't think there's any app device anything. I mean, there's Facebook. WhatsApp isn't at 1.5 billion. Maybe
well,
it is.
TikTok is at 1.65.
Is it really? Wow.
Installs, yeah.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah.
But
I think Facebook
for hardware,
is at
you're
2.
Right. That's saying a lot.
2 point something or other is
Facebook's monthly active users. I think broke 3 billion in there. I can't. But it's nevertheless.
It's a lot.
It's good if you're selling that.
But hardware is just much different than software. I mean,
yeah,
it's just
a little bit more margin too.
Yeah.
Jason Snell. Apple's record quarter. Don't try to trick Tim Cook. You told us that would happen, Lori Gill. You said, "Oh, I can't."
They always do. It's my favorite part.
So what did they try to get Tim to admit to this time?
Oh, let's see. There's I've got the transcripts.
They're trying to get into the 5G stuff, right? That was they're trying to dig into 5G.
Yeah, all of the ones that were, well, there was two that like were sort of specifically sort of hinting at 5G and what Apple's planning to do. And one of them was just this sort of general forecasting outside of the range that they usually give.
Did they ask him about AR or self-driving vehicles?
Nothing about self-driving vehicles. Yeah. There was somebody did comment on AR, and Tim Cook did kind of basically sort of reiterated what he had been quoted as saying, which is that he's very excited about AR. So yeah, that all kind of made sense. That all fit into
I'm still very excited.
yes, exactly.
You should see
what I'm
seeing.
Well, he was excited because he believes that AR has applications in both business and commercial, and he likes when technologies have that broad an impact. Yeah. It makes them much more efficient to deliver.
Yeah. It's a bigger market. Let's see. I'm just reading Jason's tricked us thing. This is just his analysis of the graphs that we just
I think down toward the bottom, he actually goes into the specifics.
Tim Cook sounded a little under the weather on Tuesday. He spoke in a... You could tell Jason's a podcaster. He spoke in a subdued tone, cleared his throat, sniffled, and sounded like he was speaking around some sort of lozenge, or perhaps it was a cough drop, maybe a fisherman's friend. And even when ill, Tim Cook is a wily fellow who can't be tricked into disclosing future Apple product directions, even by wily financial analysts. And you're right, 5G Katie Huberty of Morgan Stanley. Tim, at some point in the future, will Apple launch a 5G phone? How big of a demand is there for 5G?
Actually, she didn't even ask. She actually said, at some point in the future, Apple will launch a 5G phone.
That's fair.
And so because of that knowledge that you haven't given to us, give us some ideas on how that's going to work. She was totally trying to, like, you know, like, oh, well,
gaslight
I'm not
him.
Asking him. I'm just stating facts about the future. It was great. Yeah.
I'm asking you about the overall market for 5G phones. I was like three. Was that two questions or three?
Yeah.
See, I think he should have just said, well, that's assuming that the 5G is going to be the prevailing standard. And then just walk away from that. Just drop a bomb
Else could it be?
That would be good for a year of rumors.
Based on the, this is Sumeet Chatterjee of JP Morgan. Based on the velocity of momentum you're seeing for the products exiting the quarter, how comfortable are you feeling about sustaining growth in iPhone revenues throughout the year? You know, says Tim, we have a practice of forecasting the current quarter, and so we've given you the range we expect. We're not going to say anything beyond that.
It was a big range for next quarter, though, because of the coronavirus and the uncertainty around what impact they're going to have.
Now, they say they're going
the biggest guidance ever.
They're going back to work in a week. Apple's factories are going to go back to work in a week. They took it a couple extra weeks off after the Lunar New Year, right?
Yeah.
The stores are all closed.
They closed the stores.
Right.
He gave a pretty in-depth answer to that question. Especially when they're talking about supplies for RAM, I think, asking for respect to supply chain. We do have some suppliers in the Wuhan area. All these suppliers are ultimate sources. We're obviously working on mitigation plans to make up any expected on and on and on. Because this is probably the biggest variable of all the topics he had to cover during this thing. There's a lot we just don't know, including just how easy is it going to be to get people to go to work or to get people to go from wherever they are. Anyway, it's a big, big variable, which is probably why this is probably the longest substantive answer that he gave during the entire Q&A.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're also deep cleaning the stores frequently.
Yeah.
And checking temperatures.
Mm-hmm. Reduced operating hours.
I think the issue with the checking the temperature thing is that I think it takes up to 14 days before anyone even shows symptoms.
That's the problem.
So that's great that they do it, but that's also that's part of the problem with the spread of this particular virus is that it doesn't show the symptoms quite as fast.
Well, and I think that the issue is that you can spread it. Yeah, you can spread it without showing symptoms, which is what really, and then the mortality rate is 10 times the normal flu. So that's what's tightening everybody up.
No, I think the mortality rate is actually, it's like 3% or 4%, I think, from the CDC.
Is 0.001.
Okay.
Mortality. So it's, I don't know. It was, again, me listening to news in the morning while I'm making breakfast. But I think it was something like much higher mortality rate. That's what they're worried about. And just having another one that they have to manage. Like they're like, we can kill it off right now, or we have to deal with this every season. And so they're trying to kill it off. Anyway, so all of China shutting down though.
My son's in Asia right now on vacation.
Oh,
and
where?
He's moving around. I think he was in Bali. He was in Vietnam.
Did he have some Vietnamese coffee?
Huh?
I hope he had some Vietnamese coffee.
I'm sure he did. Are you kidding me?
Oh my gosh.
But Apple messaging him instructions. Wash your hands. The mask isn't as important. It's wash the surfaces. Don't touch your face. It's so funny.
I was in Vietnam at an ad agency and they served me coffee. I'm like, is this so Vietnamese coffee? And they were like, yeah, it's coffee.
You're in Vietnam.
You know, it's coffee. Call it Vietnamese coffee here. You know, it's just coffee. Yeah. And I was like,
we don't call it Vietnamese coffee. Yeah, that tomato soup and that grilled cheese sandwich, that's American food.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, as we always remind everybody, the flu is a much bigger threat, at least to date. Get your shot.
Yeah.
Yes. Hashtag not doctors, not investor
hashtag,
advice.
Hashtag, yeah.
Well, that also reminded me of something about what we're talking about, having faith in our election systems. The difficulty when the rumors and the fear gets way out of hand, we can't even convince people anymore that a measles vaccination is a really good idea. Yeah. And so we've gone from having this, I think it was designated as eradicated just 10, 15 years ago to now it is, of course, increasing in numbers. Imagine how difficult it is to get people to not believe politically and culturally motivated bad information about election systems. And now you're talking about the difficulties we have in having any sort of positive change in the world.
So what I found out is you tell them that 5G, because everyone's scared of 5G, right? Because like nobody likes science no matter which way it goes, that 5G is caused by carbon and the only way to protect yourself is with inoculation. Then
just,
we solve all the
just
world's
to
problems.
Put this in perspective, the R-naught of coronavirus is believed to be somewhere between 1.5 and 2.5. That's the number of people you're inspected to infect if you have it, 1 to 2 people.
For some reason, I thought it was like 3.
For measles, it's 12 to 18.
Yeah. Right. And the amount of people you need inoculated around you as a shield is, you know, enormous.
To say nothing about immunity compromised people that you might be exposed to. I don't have much fear about getting a terrible flu myself. My terrible fear is that I myself will have a couple of days where I'm a little bit tired, but I don't know why, and I don't know why I have the flu. But I visited some people or happened to be exchanging handshakes or somebody with somebody who is immunity comprised, and they're going to have a really, really bad couple of months, or they're going to have a hospitalization. That's why we don't get shots to protect ourselves. We are individually, we get shots to protect ourselves collectively, and a lot of people forget
Fun story. Hi, Mom. In my high school, there was a compromised batch of measles vaccine, and kids started getting measles.
Oh.
And the doctors at first could not diagnose it until one old German doctor came in and goes, "That's measles. What's the matter with you people? Don't you recognize it?" No, they did not.
We haven't seen that in a while.
Things just shut down. And those are for people who intended to be vaccinated.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you can't fool around with that stuff.
It's just like a Star Trek episode. Fascinating. The computer says a disease that was eradicated 300 years ago, and then they solve it all in the last act of the whole story.
I just read something. It was on Reddit, so maybe you remember this, Karsten. Measles was introduced from the bovine population to the human population in the, I think, the 16th century. But it's another animal virus that got communicated over to humans.
CGP Grey has a great video on that about, you know, as we started agriculture and penning animals into the same cities, that's just all the diseases that started
keep the animals
up.
Away. That was the number one tip I gave my son. Don't go in any live animal markets. Stay away. Gwyneth
Don't
Paltrow.
Name the livestock.
Yeah, that's right. Don't get to know your livestock. Anything else about the quarterly results? I think we've covered them pretty thoroughly.
All the way down to the viruses.
All the way down to the coronavirus.
Apple really does seem unstoppable.
It's,
and I say that not as a financial analyst, but just as somebody who reads these reports. But it's like I think it's healthy to be cynical a little bit, more than a little bit, particularly when it's such a good piece of PR. But when I was reading that transcript over and over again last week and getting in touch with people who know a lot more about these things than I do to make sure that, well, that sounds weird. No, it isn't weird. Okay. There just is not anything in this report that is not either A, good news, or B, indication that whatever their plans are, it's working very, very well. So that's pretty exceptional.
I actually think that one of the things that risk factors for Apple is less of that something going wrong for them particularly, and more of more issues happening with Android. So if you look at Huawei talking about moving away from Android, Samsung has threatened to do that for a while. If Apple gets a majority stake, it puts them in an entirely different legal position of what they're doing. Right now, sitting in a minority stake, which they seem to be safe in right now, I think is good for them, because they're allowed to do a lot of things that they can't.
You don't want to be a monopoly.
What you don't want to do is start having a majority stake.
Yeah,
they're never going to have a majority stake, because they can't cater to everybody, and they can't cater to every price, they can't cater to every usage.
Is it majority 51% or is it 90%?
Well, it's just that people will have a much much deeper conversation when it gets to 51. Yeah. You know, and the problem is you take out Huawei and Samsung out of the Android environment if that happened. And you end up in a, you know, Android ends up in a different position.
Bill Gates showed up on the big screen with Steve Jobs in front of him saying, we're going to give you $150 million, Apple. We don't want you to go out of business.
There's rumors there were a lot more.
It's probably unfeasible for the, even if they jerk around with the operating system and make their own custom Android, it's too hard for them to leave Google Play, especially outside of China. Windows Phone and Palm have shown us what happens when you don't have a thriving app economy and nobody wants any part of that.
BlackBerry's last phones are coming off the assembly line.
Oh, God, I was so sad for Canada, Leo. We lost Nortel. We lost Matrox. I think Corel is like a footnote now, and they've taken our BlackBerry.
TCL has announced they're not going to make any more BlackBerry phones, but could somebody else make them?
BlackBerry had licensed the manufacturer of handsets to TCL, and they could license it to somebody else, but I don't think there's a huge lineup of OEMs. I mean, who knows what HTC will ever do, but I don't think there's a huge lineup of OEMs beating a path to their door.
Especially if TCL has said, it's not worth it.
BlackBerry is going to become like Polaroid and Kodak. Some company is going to buy the trademark and then put it on really, really super cheap. Yeah, exactly.
BlackBerry's not dying. They're just not in the phone business. They own QNX, which is not a bad property to own.
Right. But Nortel's still around, Leo. But how often does it come up in everyday conversation? It's like what happens is they niche down and they become a patent holding entity, and it's sad because there were not that many countries that were making vibrant phone hardware and operating systems.
It was the last phone I owned before the iPhone came out in 2007.
That was the problem. That was the last phone everybody owned.
Bye-bye. Never owned another one. In fact, Lisa, when we first got together, probably about 2010, 11, something like that, was rocking a BlackBerry Storm. Yeah, remember how awful that was? That was the one where you pushed the whole screen to click?
It won the BlackBerry Award for Innovation of the Year, Leo. How can you say that?
I convinced her that maybe she should get an iPhone, and I don't see
I actually shot a short for the Storm, and using it made I was like, I just got to finish this. I just got to get this done.
The moment when I knew that BlackBerry was doomed was when I was called in for another briefing, routine stuff. I thought, okay, so I'll get to talk to some engineers and they might show me something, one or two. And they just took out case after showing me the next 2 years worth of hardware samples of things they were planning to do. And I thought, you don't, even under NDA, you don't tell a person, you don't tell a member of the press, you don't announce what you're going to do for the next 2 years unless you are absolutely convinced nobody thinks you have a future. You're not going to know 2 years from now what product you need to put into the market.
And they stopped making phones. The only thing that was making the money, they stopped making phones for an entire year to make the playbook, which then they did not sell.
Yeah.
Oh, God, the playbook.
It's so sad.
That was a nightmare. Josh Nadeau writing for Fast Company. Apple has a Vladimir Putin problem. what he's talking about is the law that Russia will put into effect this summer. It's being colloquially known as the law against Apple. It will require all smartphone devices to preload applications that are Russian in origin. Now, of course, Apple traditionally prevents device carriers from putting anything on there. Verizon, anybody can't put anything on there. So that's an aesthetic issue. There's also the security issue and privacy issue that Russian devices may have spyware put on them by the Russian government. We don't know. Nadeau's contention is that Apple's going to have to kind of cross this Rubicon in July 2020, either quit the country or go along with the Russian law. What do you think Apple will do?
I think that
they have to quit.
They have to quit.
They can't possibly acquiesce, or else they're basically saying this is our plan for every single country that wants to do anything to our phones before they reach the hands of our customers. They can't do it. Also, the simple idea that we've talked about this so many times before, they have to put up or shut up on privacy and security. If they're going to say that we're going to allow a state to put software on our phones that in our view might compromise the privacy of the data that's on that phone, they should also put up another big banner on the side of a building saying that this is all just PR and it means nothing to us. Well, they have no alternative.
Well, maybe. The question is are some of the privacy things that we're seeing where we're constantly being told we're sharing our steps towards the idea that the OS really gets into a position where it doesn't trust the apps that are sitting on top of it. So yeah, you can pre-install them, but the user can uninstall them. And in addition to that, the OS is never going to trust the app. You know, like you know, or never going to trust an app that doesn't go through certain
certification. That might be a technological solution is to sandbox the Russian apps.
Right. Well, sandbox apps that aren't in some kind of Apple trusted network. You know, there has to be something, and the Russian apps don't fit inside that. Yeah. So you're following the law, but not. And I think that what you would say is like if you're not certain that you can get that done, you cut them off. But there's no reason for them to say anything now, right? But you know, they're going to have. But what if you had a situation where you release it in Russia where, you know, and it wouldn't be perfect at first, but you get into a way and then you're in a cat and mouse issue with the Russian government.
There is a precedent. Apple removed or changed the way it showed the Crimean Peninsula in the Apple Maps in response to a Russian law which said, you know, you can't show Crimea.
Which Google did as well.
Yeah,
yeah. That was a non-controversy,
really,
in my view.
Well, the Ukrainians there were some Ukrainians that were upset about it.
If I were Ukrainian, I wouldn't be too happy about it. It's like showing Taiwan as a Chinese,
which they do.
Protector.
See that? I think that there's a difference between when we talked to actual cartographers about it. Even they have. Debates over when do we say that a border has changed or a border has moved, and it's not necessarily because of pressure of the country that did the land grab. You really have to say when people are people say, you have to make sure that the map reflects what the world thinks the border is, and you also have to. There's a tradition to uphold, so I don't think that's the same
they're
thing.
Only doing it in Russia. If you look at
the Russian world, Leo.
Yeah. If you do look at Crimea, or the Russian world, if you do look at like, which includes, I gather, Ukraine. If you look at Crimea here, it's not part of the Russian Federation. It's part of Ukraine. If you look at it in Russia, it's part of the Russian Federation. So that is kowtowing to a government to change the map just for that government, much as they don't show the Taiwanese flag in Hong Kong or mainland.
And they
China.
Don't put FaceTime into
lots of airlines all don't say that they're going to, you know, they get,
yeah.
Have to take
so
Taiwan
here's
off,
what so I think. I think Apple's going to give in. They're going to say we have to adhere to the laws of the countries we're in. If they do what you say, Andy, if they leave Russia, then the next country is India. The next country after that is China.
Well, China is the only dangerous one.
The next country after that is Myanmar. The next country after that is the United States.
That's...
The next
well, there's a couple. I mean,
then
there's
Verizon and T-Mobile say, hey, what about us?
But I think that what it could
affect... There's a couple precedent. Sorry.
Go ahead. Renee.
No, I said there's a couple precedents here because Apple famously or infamously doesn't have FaceTime in some Middle Eastern countries where it's not allowed to have the FaceTime app. And I know removing
that's cultural apps is different sensitivity
than adding. Yeah, no, totally. But it is changing the operating system due to, you know, to the different borders. The thing that's interesting here is when you look at it from outside, if we lived in an idyllic Star Trek world, there is an objective case to be made that some countries are as comfortable with America controlling the software on their citizens' phones as America has been with Huawei controlling the software that's on American phones.
I understand
that. But we don't live in that world. And there's a couple of possibilities. One is leaving Russia because it's not a huge impact. But when you hit China, it becomes untenable. The other is you make it not your problem. And that is Russia can make a law that the carrier or the vendor, before they hand over the phone to you, has to plug it into some sort of enterprise management thing or just some sort of app dispersal thing and preload. You know, instead of iMessage, it's uMessage or whatever alternative they want is. And then to Alex's point, the operating system can pop up if it has a problem. People can delete them if they have a problem. And it satisfies the letter of the law, if not the spirit
that's
of the law,
think,
but also makes everybody safe.
Yeah, some sort of technological middle ground.
Which it could be.
Like Sprint.
You know, this has been talked about for a long time. And what we're seeing is there is a more adversarial relationship I've noticed in the last OS update. Where my OS is constantly telling me what all the other apps are doing.
Yeah.
So there's this adversarial relationship that's
already
being built up between the apps and the thing, which is obviously what a lot of developers are complaining about. You know, that they say we can't run our business if we can't be installed on those things.
The Tile CEO said Apple's kind of inhibiting our ability to make money and in favor of their Find My iPhone.
But what they're really doing is protecting. I mean. I don't think Apple's doing it.
They're protecting the user.
They're protecting the user from this constant. You know, like for me, a lot of times with something like Messenger, it's always set on, you can track me when I'm there. The only time I ever turn it on track all the time is when I'm sharing my location with someone that doesn't have an iPhone.
I think it's much more likely we're going to see some sort of middle ground like that, then Apple says goodbye, Russia. Because
I think they would at least try it.
They can't say yes, okay, fine, go ahead. That's a precedent that they don't want to set. They can't leave Russia. That's a precedent they don't want to set. There's got
to
be.
But they've had time to work on this, you know. And again, I don't know if it'll be perfect when they start it, but I bet you, you know, over a couple of years, they can get pretty good.
You said this all along, Andy, that there is at some point a line beyond which they can't go.
And I think.
Yeah. You just can't disclose just saying, in advance and people will walk right up to it.
What Russia's not requesting is being able to hack the phone, being able to open the phone yet. I mean, that's not a request that Russia. And I think that is the line
that Apple has. And honestly, that's the main reason we're talking about this is because we know that the U.S., the Five Eyes, Russia, China, everybody wants Apple to break the encryption on the phone.
Right.
The key word being yet. I think it's really optimistic that Apple will try to find a way to comply with the letter of the law, but not give the Russian government what they want. The Russian government will say, no, that's not what we mean. Congratulations. You've just earned yourself a hardware sales ban within our country until you actually toe the line. I just think that Apple has to I'm sure they have internally, but this is a fight they're going to have to fight on every single border all across the world. And it's OK for them to say that it's OK for them to say that we have a variable stance on privacy so long as it doesn't over much interfere with our ability to do business within a territory. We think that it's an important thing, but it is something that we are willing to put on the table if it means staying inside a certain market. That's a justifiable point to make. I disagree with it, but it's a justifiable point to make. But if they think that they can continue to do business with these countries and continue to just give and give and give, and that doesn't teach these governments that whatever we ask, Apple will cave in, it's a fool's errand. I think that they have to make sure that I'm sure that it's somewhere there's some ledger that says that here's what will happen at the time at which Turkey or Russia or any other country says that you have to have a battery killing feature that allows us to instantly turn on any subgroup of users for live 24/7 tracking at any moment without informing that user. Are you going to do that, or are you going to simply say that, okay, we can't do that. Congratulations, we just lost China. We just lost this entire country.
And the reality is that Russia is a small enough market that Apple could afford to lose them. I mean, they could afford to let go of that money. You know, it's not – that's the amount of money spent in Russia, I believe, is $3 billion, which is the amount that they were accidentally over their projections, you know, this quarter. So it's not a big – it's not really – I mean, it's a – billions of dollars, but it's not.
But you don't think it's a massive precedent problem? Because then, if they don't walk from China, which they can't, then the criticism is.
Well, but the other thing is, it's a communication to China that
they
Apple
might.
So
they could.
The problem on China's side is if Apple says we're going to walk, you know, if China starts rumbling, then you know Apple's already started figuring out where else to build iPhones, and you know that starts to become that becomes a much more complicated thing.
It's a consequence. The Chinese government may not want to.
There's a relationship there, you know, and I think that's a much more complicated relationship than Russia.
How many Russians use iPhones? Would it be a political consequence?
It would be a good gray market if it happens.
Yeah, I was talking the other day. I remember. We used to get in line and get iPhones some years ago, and there'd be a lot of people in line who weren't buying them for themselves, but were buying as many as they could to send to China when it was still a big market for black market iPhones.
When this was when it got started, you know, I didn't do it, but when I was going to Africa, all my friends in Africa said, you know, we'll pay 2x.
Yeah.
You know, if you just bring them down, because it was a real.
And some Levi's too, while you're at it.
They didn't care about Levi's, but they did care a lot about the
Levi's. Used to be big in the Soviet Union and the Czech
Republic.
Pretty much
Beatles tapes.
Yeah.
In Africa, the big thing was anything with a logo on it, American logo, was a big deal. So I would, you know, come down with a bunch of shirts. And I trade them for statues, like sculptures.
Some Kamala Harris 2020 shirts. You can just bring those.
Like I, all kinds. I had all these concert t-shirts.
You can get a lot of old ones.
I had all these concert t-shirts. And I
49ers win the Super Bowl. That's a good one. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, man.
They make the shirts and hats, and that's what happens to them. They end up in Africa.
Yeah. Some of my
best pictures from my trip to Beijing was going to the counterfeit market and seeing. I think this was just before they could actually sell the iPhone in China. I could be wrong, but you even saw like case after case the Apple logo on everything. There was a really bad, not even like a knockoff of the iPhone. I'm talking about a really bad like flip phone, but has like a back illuminated Apple logo on the front on the cover of it that I almost bought.
I have a bunch of iPhones running Android in my museum over here. From China.
Did you see the one where the guy had his iPhone stolen And then, but it didn't, they didn't unconnect it from his .me account, his .mac account. And so then the Chinese person that ended up buying that used phone was taking all these pictures, and it was showing up on his .me wow. account, and he finally figured out who the guy was, and they started going back and forth. They got along. He went and visited him, and he turned out to be like a rock star in China. It was a funny connection.
Good
too,
way to meet people. Let him steal your phone.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, some really good news. I just saw the tweet. Disney Plus is getting Hamilton.
My kids.
Yeah.
October 15th, Hamilton's theatrical release on Disney. Oh, 2021. That's like a year and a half from now.
The good news
gotta
is
sell tickets. Gotta
no
sell
one
those,
will
those
care by then. Come on, guys.
The good news is I don't have to turn
Hamilton's
Disney
waited
Plus
this
back
many
back
hundred
on
of
until,
years, Leo.
Yeah, I guess so.
I don't have to turn Disney Plus back on until Mandalorian.
No, you got time. You got so it's come out theatrical. Probably won't be till 2022 before you have to turn Disney Plus back on.
Yeah,
you can watch the Mandalorian.
I kept it for a couple weeks, and I was like, I am not using this, and I just turned it off. I was like, okay, I'm done.
They are definitely going to go for a theatrical release because they definitely want to have get if Lin, you have to make sure that people get a chance to win some Oscars, and that's a good idea. But the for me, the best news is that it's not going to be like The Producers. It's not going to be like Hello Dolly, where they tried to take like this Cats. Beautiful stage musical or Cats, another good example, where they tried, we have to make it into a movie, so we're going to cut the best numbers, and also we're going to all they did was they had the forethought to know that, you know what, this is going to be, it's going to be really, really valuable at some point in the future if before the original cast's contract go bye-bye, we just film an entire performance with the original cast on the original stage with all the original blocking and everything, and let's just put that in a vault somewhere. Because in a few years' time, after we think that everybody who was capable of spending $800 for a ticket has spent that $800, we want to release it. And this is the reason why. Although I have had opportunities to spend $350 or $400 to go see Hamilton, A, because I'm a cheapskate, but also because I know that they have in a vault somewhere a really good film of this, and I kind of want to see that with the original cast.
I hope they shoot it in 8K. HDR.
They already shot it. It's the original cast. They already shot it at the Richard Rogers Theater.
It's done. It's
done. Shot on iPhone. It's fine.
No, I remember the rumor that they were.
I have
one
of those too.
I remember the rumor they had filmed it when the cast was still there. We managed to see it a few weeks before the original cast broke up, and it's amazing and I highly recommend it. It was filmed in 2016 during the original run.
I hope more musicals do this. It's just such a great idea.
I wish they wouldn't wait so long.
I guess for me, it's like 2016 makes me feel like it's probably just 1080p. Maybe even 1080i.
Oh, yeah.
It'll be fine. It's not about the frame rate. It's
2016.
All about the
performance.
I would have preferred the Lion King theatrical than that remake CGI movie.
You know, good point. Get Julie Taymor up on the stage there.
See, this is one of my gray areas when it comes to like copyrighted content being pirated. It's like I'm absolutely 100% against people sneaking phones into theaters, and I'm 100%. But if that exists, and you know that the 1991 revival of Guys and Dolls, like that the only way to like revisit that amazing cast and that amazing revival is somebody happened to sneak inside a grocery bag or something, is 1991 technology, but I will say you were very naughty to have done that, and where's the download link for that?
Yeah,
otherwise these things disappear, and you can't let creative works just disappear. It's cruel.
Well, that's the good news, is I would imagine in the era of iPhones that everything is recorded now, and there's
we had angry Arnold Schwarzenegger come to Montreal and yell at us because apparently we were the phone bootleg capital of the world, and he was just like, you're stealing our movies.
Oh,
Papa, your country is stealing our movies.
That's terrible.
He was so angry. So angry.
Don't copy that floppy, Renee.
So it's the end of the world as we know it. The EU has snubbed Apple's pleas to overwhelmingly vote to push for a charging cable standard. Now the implementation details.
Good news. It's mini USB. Nobody needs to panic.
I'm not sure what the upshot of this will be. It was, clearly they were worried about the landfill waste and they didn't pay any attention to Apple's complaints.
So, going by like their innovation. YouTube regulations and their how bloggers are allowed to link regulations, what could possibly go wrong?
We'll see. There is a lot still to be determined. This is just a resolution.
Well, and I guess the question is whether Apple can build, just give it an adapter. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, it should be. The thing that they're really worried about isn't the end that plugs into your phone. It's the end that plugs into the wall. They acknowledge that adapters are perfectly fine. It's just this big, bulky brick that they think that if we standardize on one kind of brick that will work with pretty much anything, that's going to be fine. They've also noted in the first public statements they were making about this 3 weeks ago or so during a plenary session, they mentioned how they started getting on this in about 7 or 8 years ago. And during that time, they've gone from about 40 different types of chargers to only about 2 or 3. So they also acknowledge that this is no longer the big problem that it once was, but it's still, they see, as a solvable problem in terms of e-waste.
Apple lost a big patent suit. It says it will appeal. Caltech sued Apple and Broadcom over Wi-Fi patents, and a jury awarded Caltech $837.8 million from Apple, $270 million from Broadcom, more than $1 billion, a big payday for Caltech, but don't start counting the money just yet.
It's a weird one, though, because it's weird in several ways. One is that Broadcom, if anyone was infringing the patented work, it was Broadcom. But Apple has the big bucks, so you add Apple to the lawsuit. But Apple's not the only licensor of Broadcom. So if we go by – so either your theory is that Broadcom is liable for patent infringement if it can be proven and not the companies that buy stuff from Broadcom – or every company that buys stuff from Broadcom is then liable, and then any company that buys anything from anyone is liable to the infringement of the company that they buy from. And this just seems like bad law to me, no matter which way you look at it.
Well, it's going to be another few years. So.
Yeah. I mean, the Vertinex patents over FaceTime have been going on for 10 years
now.
Yeah,
they've been reduced again and again, so.
Like I say, it speaks well of Apple that even though they are one of these richest companies in terms of having actual cash on hand, they don't act like one of those trust fund kids who just like sideswipes a vehicle while drunk, says, here's $10,000. I don't care. If they were jerks, they would just be paying all these fines and just moving on with their lives instead of actually fighting it on the tentative basis that they're right.
They're probably afraid they'll get sued more and more if they give in easily. Yeah.
So the
there you go, more simoleons. Make it rain.
You got to make it. As a company like that, you have to make it painful.
I know. Pain.
The WebKit team at Apple has proposed a way to make text messages one-time passwords secure. As we know, with simjacking, they are not secure. They really are problematic, and we always encourage people to use either an authenticator app or a hardware authentication key like the YubiKey. Apple engineers proposed, and Google agreed to, and perhaps will adopt as well, a standard messaging system that would make it more secure. OTP SMS messages that can be associated with a URL by adding a login URL inside the SMS itself, and then to standardize the format of these messages so that browsers and mobile apps can easily detect the incoming SMS, recognize the web domain inside the message, then automatically extract the OTP code and complete the login. All of that's nice. But I don't know how that makes it more secure. I'll have to read more about this. Maybe Steve Gibson will talk about it. The idea is you won't fall for a scam text message, that it will be so automated that the scam message wouldn't work. But it doesn't solve the simjacking problem, I think. But I don't know. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Renee.
No, not at all. It's just this is a new team at Apple, I believe within the last year that this was formed. And their whole goal is to make the web both more secure and more human, because they realized that security by itself could be, you could lock yourself out. It could become unusable, but too much convenience and people start getting taken advantage of. So their whole goal is just to sit there and come up with new and better ways to provide us with security that is still user friendly. And this is the first thing we've seen from them, which I think is exciting.
You were excited about Foundation, I think, when we talked last week. We now learned from a nice little site called iMore.com that it will be the largest ever production shot in Ireland. They begin shooting later this year in Limerick. Foundation is an Apple original drama series that based on, of course, the incredible Isaac Asimov series.
Yeah.
500 production jobs will be created with over 40 skills. Are they making all? How many of the novels are they making? There are quite a few foundations.
I don't think they've said yet. I guess it'll depend on how many seasons they.
Yeah. Yes, that's right.
This is, by the way, how you build an industry somewhere. It's a great whatever they're.
Well,
doing
isn't Ireland already? I mean, pretty big TV production.
It is, but nothing country. At that scale.
Yeah.
Wasn't Game of Thrones shot
a lot of it was shot in Ireland?
I thought it was some in Ireland. I think a lot in
Eastern
Iceland.
Europe.
In Eastern Europe.
Yeah. I know Croatia is.
But I think that,
we
you know.
We saw when we were visiting Diocletian's palace in Croatia. They said, don't take any pictures of that. So why? What is that? Don't take any pictures of that. It's off limits. It was a staircase. It was the place that the dragons were stored in the castle.
Where
Daenerys Targaryen. And there was a staircase that they built that wasn't there originally. They built, and it's all. They said, don't take any pictures of that. It's okay, fine. So, yeah. That's more of that in Limerick.
Yeah.
Do you imagine, like, in 300 or 400 years, there's going to be archaeologists who are going to find, spear points and dragon teeth? Yeah. It's like, oh, my God. How did previous groups miss this?
What was going on?
They must have had virtual houses that they usually walk up to and then walk into the energy.
There's a door, but no home.
This is known as the Spirit Cabin, as most of these people had rather interesting beliefs in deities. So they would create a door that goes nowhere.
Nowhere.
So that the evil spirits would be lit up.
The Elijah door. LG TVs are starting to arrive with Apple TV installed. This is a big deal. And compatible 2019 LG smart TVs, you'll be able to get Apple TV.
And you... I still don't think you should plug those into an internet.
I am so delighted, though, that there is not delight is the wrong word, but it's amazing to me that there are engineers sitting like at Results Way or Infinite Loop or somewhere making the TV app for Tizen for WebOS because the LG TVs run WebOS.
What? That's wild.
And they're sitting there going, what are we compiling this in? I don't know. OpenGL, F it. Just do it.
It's all written in Python.
Yeah.
Let's see, what else? What other stories?
Alex, can you talk a little bit more about why? Because I have a smart TV that I have not connected to the internet. I think I have a similar feeling as you about this. Why do you think it's a bad idea to connect your smart TV to the internet and take advantage of the apps like directly from the TV?
Well, there's two problems. One is the chipsets in the TVs are a lot cheaper than the Apple TV. So they're not going to be able to process, they're not going to process the video as well. Secondly, and I have trouble even with some of the Apple TV stuff where we're not getting the frame rates that I would expect. There's certain like Netflix, for instance, for some reason has a lot of frame rate issues for me anyway when I'm watching certain things in high motion. And I don't know if anyone else notices. It drives me crazy. Just certain places where you start to see things not coming back together. You never see it when on Apple, on iTunes. And you rarely see it on... Disney looks good, but when you start getting to the other ones, there's a variety of issues, and those TVs will have more of those issues. Secondly, and more importantly, is that they're all talking to home. I mean, there's no real rules set up for those things, and you don't know what kind of security is there. So you're giving a lot of data to them, and I don't see any. For me, I just decided to keep it simple and just those TVs stay where they are, which is dumb, and the Apple TV, is... empowered to talk to the internet, and I just found it simpler to keep it all in one box rather than it also makes it easier for me to move the Apple TV around to different TVs, and it's a seamless experience. And so so there's some convenience, I think there's some performance issues, and then security. Mm-hmm. So for those three reasons, I'm not a big fan of connecting it to the internet. Mm-hmm. If that makes sense. I don't know, Andy, what's your opinion on that?
I just don't trust when they're selling a 4K HDR 65 inch screen for $400. They're making some money somewhere, And so that's why I really don't want this thing talking to the internet if I can prevent that from happening. And also for the reasons that you explain, that I have a really, really cheap TV box on the TV in my living room. I have a $300 one on the TV in my living room, and just the speed, the quality, the video, everything is so much better on having a separate box that costs made by a graphics card company that knows how to process live streaming graphics. So yeah, I'm totally with you.
I'm also like in the Alex camp where I would love, I know like the current Apple TV 4K, people think it's like overpowered, but when you get to HDR and then you start doing overlays on it, you can still peg it. So I would actually love it if Apple would put out a second edition 4K that has a 2 year later processor that could really just smash through even multi-layer composited HDR. That would make me super happy.
I was kind of bummed that the Super Bowl wasn't in 4K HDR on the Apple TV. It was in 4K, but not HDR. So I had to use a Chromecast Ultra for the HDR. By the way, that looks good. Did you try it?
No, I don't.
Fox was streaming it, but you had to use a streaming app or be using Dish or Xfinity. But I watched on Fox Sports app on the Roku Ultra, 4K HDR. They shot at 1080p 60. And then upscaled to 4K, but it wasn't HDR. It looks spectacular. I would love to watch all the sports. The worst part was the app.
Yeah, because it's hard to do both. It's hard to deliver both the HDR and SDR well. YouTube still can't do it.
Oh, you know what? The SDR was bad. I had SDR at first because I was watching on some other app. And then the Apple TV, for some reason, had 4K, but I guess the HDR that they were doing that wasn't compatible with the Apple.
All I know is that YouTube promoted YouTube TV for the Super Bowl. And I happen to watch it. That's all I have. I've been a cord cutter for a couple decades, and so I don't have any way to get. You know, it always asks you for a broadcast license or whatever, and so I don't have any way to do that. And so I was watching. I watched the Super Bowl on a, on YouTube TV, which is like the worst experience.
Didn't
you
look
can
so
have.
Good.
I mean, it's you know, anytime there's high motion, it starts breaking up, and then the ticker tape was just squares. Like, it was just, like, when the ticker came, my kids were like, what happened to the picture?
You.
I'm like, that's called macro blocking. And I had this long talk with my 10-year-old.
Fox Sports was giving it away. You didn't have to sign up or anything.
I probably should have.
It was amazing.
I just got back.
How I want to watch all sports now.
I will say that Amazon, their Thursday night executions were, after the first one, there were some issues. But after that, their 4K execution was truly...
It's amazing. There was no stuttering. The audio is perfect. The sync was perfect. I'm sure there were millions of people watching simultaneously, and it was flawless.
Yeah.
They really they figured this out.
Their OpenGL app is horrible, though.
Oh, well. you can't win them all. I got to, as somebody in the chat room said, I got to cry in HDR.
Yeah. they got my wife a couple times. She was like, she got hit on the Google one, and then there was another one, and a couple of
HDR Shakira and JLo. I mean, like, you just win the internet with that.
That was pretty awesome. Yeah, that was pretty awesome. I was very happy to see that. Let's take a little break. When we come back, your picks, folks. You want to do that?
Sure.
All right. Our show brought to you quite literally by Cashfly. Actually, I'm going to ask you about this, Alex, because I don't know what a 100% cash hit ratio means in the context of a content delivery network. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to put you on the spot. I'll tell you, and then you tell me.
Okay.
Cashfly, we use Cashfly. We have for over a decade, petabytes of data a month through Cashfly. As with most content delivery services, the idea is you have servers at the edge. So when somebody's downloading it, they're getting it not from me or from my host, but from a server close to them, right? That's the whole idea.
Right. Yeah, and I believe that what they mean there, because Cashfly is a little different than what we do, because we're doing live and they do a little live, but they're doing mostly VOD.
Yeah, it's when you download our shows.
It's just saying that you're not coming back to one central location. It's going to massively increase the, if you know that 100% of the time it's out in the, you know, it's cached in the edge, that you're going to get a much better performance of how your bits are going to
come back. That's the new feature in Cashfly. Yeah. They call it 100% cash shield.
And the reason that's important is that usually what happens is that when you ask for a piece of content, you go back to the origin, like where it was sitting, and you ask for it. Now, everywhere through that edge now starts to have it, right? Once it goes through the
servers, it's cached everywhere.
But it's cached as you do it. And what they're doing here is they're
auto-propagating it.
It.
So that no matter when people hit it, they're going to get that content.
So not only is it better performance, it also saves you money. It's a drastic reduction in data transfer fees with AWS's S3 and other cloud storage origins because you're not getting it from them anymore. You download a copy, it spreads to the cache.
Right.
That's where your listeners, your users are getting it. That your cache hit ratio is now 100%. And in this day and age, we were just talking about 4K. Customers expect that instantaneous delivery. They want it to work anytime, anywhere in the world, on any device. If it's your web page, it's if your web page is slow to load, your video is buffering, if your games aren't downloading, if your podcast isn't flowing, that hurts you.
And CacheFly was amazing 12, 13 years ago. When we covered the home hi-fi or whatever, you know, and we put 400 meg file, which is not a big deal now, but it was in 2006 or whatever.
I think I actually got an
email from Matt going, "What are you transferring? We're moving." I need to know.
They've always been good about it, but they manage it.
No one noticed.
So the key here is your cached items are not getting evicted for large one-off requests, costing you a fortune in data transfer out fees. With 100% cash shield and CacheFly's guaranteed availability, it's as simple. It happens automatically. It's literally next generation content delivery for today and for tomorrow. And a dedicated storage space just for you. Keep your data and content closer to your customers without having traffic on other companies. You can buy as much space as you want. Your data is fetched from the 100% cache shield rather than from Origin. Shielding reduces your Origin spend by thousands a month, guaranteeing no cache misses. It also remarkably improves download speeds, no buffering, and guaranteed availability with the highest quality of service. Easily and reliably scale your video streaming to reach a global audience of any size. You know, I'm always blown away when I, you know, Super Bowls, they're streaming it to millions of people. This is the kinds of technology advances that make this stuff possible. Hyperfast download speeds, low latency, a great scalable solution for gaming. I mean, I feel like we're living at large here at Twit when we put everything on CacheFly. Thank you, CacheFly. CacheFly's global throughput performance dominance ensures any cache misses are delivered 5 times faster than from your origins. And just for you, you can find out right now how much is this going to cost. They're giving away a complimentary detailed analysis. Take your current CDN bill to twit.cachefly.com, your usage trends. And you're not going to pay more. That's the amazing thing. You may be paying 20% less. In many cases, most cases, 20% less. Twit.cachefly.com. We thank CacheFly so much for what was the Heinlein line? Let the roads must roll. The podcast must roll. Twit.cachefly.com. Thank you, CacheFly. Thank you. And if you are delivering content to end users, check it out. Lori Gill, your pick of the week.
I'm going with the new game that just came out a couple days ago, Spell Tower Plus.
Ooh,
you may have remembered Spell Tower from many years ago, a very addicting word game. Well, they came out with a new version. They brought it back. It's new and better, has all these great new games on it, plus the old ones that we love so much. So if you like word games, I've been playing it every single day since it came out, and I've been having a lot of fun. It's free to download. It has ads if you don't spend the $4.99 to unlock the full mode. And when you do unlock the full mode, you get a couple of extra puzzle options. So it comes with tower and puzzle, and then you unlock all the other additional ones with that $4.99 purchase. It's so much fun. I just sit there playing it for hours at a time. It's really, really great. And there's different versions that you can play, or not versions, but the different puzzles give you, you know, right now I feel like just searching for one really big word. So I'll use search. Or right now I feel like playing a, you know, reverse Tetris style version of a word game. So you play puzzle and the tiles like disappear as you, or new tiles appear as you create words. And, or I just want sort of like a Zen mode style thing. Then you just play tower and that just has all of the words in there and you try to just delete all of the tiles as you go along. So it's really fun, really relaxing. And it's free if you want to play just a couple of games. And if you really like it and you want to spend a little bit of money on it, it's only $5 to get the upgrade. download the whole game.
I'm already playing it.
It's fun.
Downloaded it. I'm already in the game. Thank you. Great. I love that kind of stuff. Great recommendation. Oh, you can only use it one. I get it. Okay. Spell Tower Plus, Zach Gage. Thank you. Lori Gill, iMore.com. Speaking of iMore, Renee Ritchie's got my pick. So I tell you what, let's share this one. Because this is going to be my pick, too. It's a little controversial, but I think it's well worth it. Yeah. Go ahead.
All right. So, yeah, whenever an app switches business models, especially most recently with the subscription model, it always becomes really controversial because we live in a time where apps have crossed the boundary. There's always a point in time where media goes from being scarce and expensive to being abundant, plentiful, and then being sort of commonplace, and people just don't want to pay as much for it. I sit here as someone who is in the news industry, and I can tell you how much people used to pay for news compared to what they're prepared to pay for it now. And apps went through a similar thing with the advent of the App Store and the Google Play Store, where we went from, you know, really expensive box software to how many free apps can I download today? And especially indie developers, people who don't just give it away on top of a service or, you know, or a big company and do it for marketing, but indie developers, people who love to craft apps, have had a hard time maintaining their business, much less working on upgrades and a whole bunch of reasons for that. But subscription pricing is the latest thing that a lot of developers are trying. And Fantastical, which is my go-to calendar app on iOS and the Mac, has just switched to that kind of plan. They're trying to lighten the load on people who are going, oh, not another subscription app, by giving you, like, there's a full Apple Watch version. The iPhone and iPad version have merged now, so there's just one version to maintain between those two. The Mac version, they're very, very close to feature parity, if not exactly there. And there are some really cool new features, like there's weather integrated everywhere. You literally see the weather for anything you want to do or anything you are doing. There's interesting calendars of all sorts and types. Like, you can see when your favorite TV shows are on. And Lori and I were doing this thing where we sent each other times to schedule an appointment. And she's like, I can do 2 o'clock, but not 3 o'clock. And I said, I can do 12, but not, that doesn't work. And two or three times we nailed a time. So it's got a lot more features. You do have to pay for it monthly. If you are a pre-existing Fantastical user and you don't want the subscription, you can get the free version that will extra unlock the additional features you used to have. You're sort of grandfathered, grandmothered into that. But you don't get all the new features. If you want all the new features, you do have to subscribe. But that team is amazing, and I have no doubts they're going to do everything they can to provide ongoing value. So I'm super, super happy with the new Fantastical.
Yeah, I am such a fan of FlexiBits, and I use
Michael
Card
Simmons.
Hot. Michael's amazing. I, of course, as soon as I saw Fantastical came out, an update came out, I bought it immediately. And I don't mind the subscription because I want to keep these guys writing software. I'm always suspicious.
Yeah, you're paying for the next version. That's what you're really doing, is paying for the next version.
And it's such a good tool, and I'm just a huge fan, so it doesn't bother me at all. It is always hard. I mean, if we started charging you for MacBreak Weekly, we'd hear about it.
Yeah.
Per show, too. Right. Imagine, like, it was. And also Kent. I keep saying Michael Simmons. His partner Kent is also amazing. Deserves tons of credit, too.
They both get credit. Okay. Yeah, I love it. I'm using it on my watch. I'm using it on my Mac. I'm using it on my iOS devices. It's just fantastic.
I'm absolutely thrilled by any decision a developer makes to let them to make it easier for them to keep supporting and keep improving the product, or even just continue to make the work that they put into it worth it in terms of beer or the electrical bill or whatever. It's not a question of my position is that when an individual creator tells you how much they're charging for this thing that they've created, they are never asking for too much money. It's always worth exactly what the creator has asked for. The only question is whether it's the amount of money that I can afford, or even just an amount of money that I'm willing to pay. But I'm not going to heap abuse upon a developer for saying, hi, well, I've been stuffing cardboard inside my shoes for the past 2 years to patch the holes in it. I would like to be able to afford like one of those insoles. So to raise $30, I'm going to have to raise the price 30 cents. And then, oh my God, the abuse they get online. And it helps when the product is as good as Fantastical.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because that's like, I like to feel as though Apple, someone at Apple has said, we should really buy this company and make it part of the OS. And then someone else said, No, because we'd only ruin it. we count on Fantastical way too much to jeopardize it. So let's just keep paying to use it, please.
$3.33 a month if you pay annually. $5 a month if you pay monthly.
Yes, yeah, so that comes to $40 a year.
I paid
so $40 a year is yeah.
Well
yeah.
worth it. Yeah. Well worth
for
it.
For an app you use not just every day but all day.
I live in it, and if only for the quick entry of appointments, it would be worth it. But there's so much other, and lots of new features too. I'm excited.
Yeah. I hate calendars, and he makes me use them. So I have like a love-hate relationship with them, but it's still a great app.
Andy, I used to use caffeine, but Andy's gone on to harder stuff. His pick of the week.
Well, I am a professional writer. My pick is amphetamine. It's a little bit like Fantastical, where it focuses on one job, but it does it so extremely and thoroughly well. All it does is prevent your Mac from going to sleep, or your screen from going to screensaver or going to low power mode. And every single time you've given a presentation, and the last 5 minutes before the presentation, you have to go into settings and adjust four or five different things to make damn sure that you don't have the thing where you're right in the middle of making an important point, but then you have to run back to the lectern to wake up your machine again, but you also have to re-authenticate because it locked the screen again. This will just make sure that no matter what happens, for either the amount of time that you designate or until you turn this off, that screen will not go to sleep, or other features that are sort of related to that. But that's the simple thing. You just click on this little menu bar item, and that's what happens. And then, because this has been out for a number of years, they just went to the sophistication route of saying, how about if every time it will automatically turn itself on and prevent your screen from waking whenever you plug in a USB device that you've designated as, oh, here's my presentation remote, or anytime the keynote is running, or anytime you're connected to the Wi-Fi network that covers like this conference room, whenever it just sees that, it will just automatically not put your screen to sleep.
That by itself makes it worthwhile.
Yeah, because I mean, I have a laptop in front of me when I do radio and other things where you can't see me, so I don't have to look as though I remember all this stuff. And that is what I have to do, like on these other machines, to make sure that this thing doesn't blank out on me. Also, I'm doing there's a lot of stuff that I'm just maintenance stuff that I happen to be doing over the past couple of weeks that involves typing in a bunch of terminal commands, and then for the next 4 hours, just lines of green text start burbling over the next 2 or 3 hours toward the screen. And I just want to have that screen visible in the room so I could just occasionally glance at that and make sure that this thing has not terminated early. So just the ability to simply go into the menu bar and click a button to make that happen, as opposed to, again, go into four different types of settings to make it happen. The other great thing is that it is freeware. It is one of the pieces of freeware that immediately, like after the first time I used it, I went and used the link to give the developer some money because it is so well done. Have this. It will solve so many problems for you and prevent so much embarrassment.
I like the triggers. I've been using caffeine, but these triggers are going to really be useful because then you can just kind of automate when it stays awake instead of having to click the little coffee cup.
My understanding is that it's based on caffeine, but it took it to the next level.
Yeah,
exactly what amphetamines are.
Yeah, exactly.
Based on caffeine, but takes it to the next level. Speed kills, kids. And now, Alex Lindsay's pick of the week.
So this is a brand new app that I only got to play with a little bit this morning because it just was released. I want to thank Alex Golner in the UK who put it up on Twitter, and I saw it, and I was like, oh, I have to check this out. And I opened it up, and I was like, oh, I really like this. And so so this is a motion graphics. It's called Calvary. And it is a motion graphics software that I think was just released yesterday just in beta. It's in beta. So right now it's a free beta download. So you can go play with it. You don't have to believe me. You just go check it out. And here's what I really like about it. Number one is it's very modern. Now, what it feels like is this kind of mix between – so I've been using After Effects since it was made by a company called Kosa and Motion since 1.0. And so what this feels like is the two of them had a baby, you know, and so you have all of these duplication and behaviors that you see in motion that make things super fast and easy, but you have a more After Effects interface. And so if you're kind of like you wish motion looked and felt a little bit more like After Effects, then you're kind of in the right place. I don't know if it does anything like visual effects. It doesn't look like it. It looks like it's mostly just there for motion graphics. But if you're doing really cool, if you want to have really great motion graphics for presentations, for videos, for those types of things, it looks amazing. One of the things that I thought was really cool that I've wanted in motion for a long time, which is I wanted to connect my data to numbers, and so I could change my numbers document and change the graph that's being animated in inside of Motion.
Nice.
What these guys do is actually they're not using numbers, but they're using Google Docs. So you can literally have you can tie a graph in this app to a Google Docs document.
What?
And as you're changing that data, it's updating the and then you can give it all these behaviors. You've got there's a lot of all kinds of really really good type and it's for people who really want to push the outer envelope. Again, it's in beta. It just got announced yesterday. I just saw it today. I played with it for a couple hours this morning, and I'm pretty impressed with it. It's worth at least downloading, playing with, and seeing if it makes sense for your workflow if you're a graphic artist.
They'll charge for it eventually, right?
I'm sure they will. Right, I'm just saying that at the moment, though, and this is the time to go play with it,
right?
Because right now it's also in beta, which means if there's something you don't like, this is where the clay may not be at all the way hardened, so you might be able to get something that you might want. I've already sent a bunch of requests.
He's smiling so big.
I only had it for a couple hours, smiling. And I was like, this is great. You need to add this. So
very nice. Cavalry. Yeah. It's Windows or Mac.
Yeah, Windows or Mac.
Yep. Cavalry.scenegroup.co. Thank you, Alex Lindsay. Follow him on Twitter at Alex Lindsay, LINDSAY. Keep up with whatever Alex is up to, which is always a mystery to me, but
I'm just messing around. this morning on Twitter I posted it. I just couldn't leave my I've been doing these TikToks with my kids.
Yeah.
And I put up one and TikTok that was 9x16 of them, talking about a wood chipper. And then I just couldn't help but put it on YouTube at 16x9 because it looks so much better at 16x9.
Oh, where did you find that? Is there a link on the...
It should be right up. There it is. There you can see
the 16x9 version.
It's not very long.
Because TikTok wouldn't let us...
Yeah, so this is 4K. This is the 4K 16x9 version.
Put on my sound.
Oh, you're going to have
to... Really?
Sure.
Wow, didn't play
that. No, YouTube's doing this lately.
A wood chipper?
Yeah.
A wood chipper.
Let me start over.
Have you ever thought about killing me?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Sure.
How would you do it?
Wood chipper.
A wood chipper?
Yeah.
A wood chipper.
Yeah.
Wow.
I know. Did you see Fargo?
Yeah.
What's that dialogue from?
I can't remember. What happens in TikTok is you don't know what the dialogue's from.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You just take it.
You say, I want that audio. Yeah. And so I pulled the audio down, made it. Now, this is
where
you
shot this, by the way, in 6K.
I shot it in 4K on a 6K camera. And I shot it. So I shot it. Admittedly, I took it a little too far. I mean, but it's what I do. If you can't over-engineer,
you use
why
magic
bother?
Bullet.
So I used, so we did, I shot it in 4K. I should have shot it in 6K. I was in kind of a rush. And then shot it in log, though. So it's shot in log. So I was able to bring it into Final Cut. I added Colorista, and then I added Magic Bullet on it to kind of clean it all up. And
it does look good.
It's fun. What's fun about it is my kids and I can, I get to play with it as a filmmaker perspective. And it's really nice and short, and the kids love doing this.
Oh, it's so much fun for them. And, they're good actors.
They're actually really good
actors. They're good. This is, they could use this as their audition piece.
Yeah, so
they're I'm saying, they really can emote.
I just love seeing Alex's facial expressions on the kids. Like, you could just see they're his kids right in their facial expressions.
Awesome. All I'm saying is that I hope you get used to people saying, oh, yeah, they do it because it's the kids love it with a 6K production. And I can see where their marks taped on the floor.
Oh, it's the Lindsay kids' father. That's going to be his new name, the Lindsay kid's father.
And already...
It's sort of like you're cheating
darling,
on their...
Be sure to stay in the reflector, darling. Come on.
It's like you're helping them cheat on their homework.
Yeah. If their homework is to make a major motion picture, yes. Lori Gill, she's a managing editor at imore.com, a very good typist, And she's on the Twitter at Appaholic. Don't forget. Well, I only say that because she types.
If I ever need a job as a typist, I can refer to this yeah. video
the star
right here.
Of the Steno pool.
I'm going to endorse you on LinkedIn. She's a very excellent typist. Excellent. Appaholic on the Twitter, APPAHOLIK. And don't forget Sick Burn, coming soon to a rock and roll venue near you. Thank you so much, Lori.
Thanks for having me.
Andy Iannocco, you'll find him at the Boston Public Library every week, talking on the radio, WGBH, public radio in Boston. When's your next appearance?
Looks like it's going to be Monday. I had to bounce around a little bit last week because of the impeachment hearings. But as usual, check my Twitter. Usually I'll post like the actual time the day before. And when we are at the Boston Public Library, please come by. It's a wonderful library. Great to take the tour, get a cup of coffee, and then watch me gesture with my hands, as I say, even though I know I'm on the radio.
Thank you, Andy. And of course, last but not least, Mr. Rene Ritchie. Also at iMore.com, where he does the Vector show every day, iMore.com/Vector. What are you working on?
I just did a theoretical March event roundup, if Apple has one. And the next one going up is going to be what I think about these Studio Pods, over-the-ear Apple-branded headphones that they're in the rumors.
Rene, look. That's we told you about that in confidence, that we write all this stuff a month in advance and just make edits as we go. You don't give away our secrets.
True.
Ladies facts. And gentlemen, we do. I'm sorry. Mac Break Weekly right after iOS today. Every Tuesday around about 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern time, 1800 UTC. Please stop by. Watch the show. We have live audio and video streaming at twit.tv/live. You can also download shows after the fact at our website, twit.tv/MBW. If you're watching the live stream, don't forget irc.twit.tv, the IRC chat room that goes on all the time behind the scenes. It's a great way to interact with us. You can also join our kind of asynchronous social efforts. Twit.community is our forum, twit.community. That's a great forum. And our Twitter clone, our Mastodon instance, if you will, twit.social, twit.community and twit.social. We're on YouTube. If you want to watch there, that's great. Best thing to do is subscribe. I don't care what app you use. Whatever app you use, if you subscribe, you're going to get it the minute it's ready every Tuesday afternoon. Thank you, everybody. But now I'm sad to say break time. Wait a minute. Go back.
Get back to
work. Break time is over. What they said. Say goodbyes.